Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Ramble, the 42nd best Fantasy Premier League podcast in the world and the unofficial best student run one. I am not Jack Donnelly today, he's busy making a living, so me, Graham Sinclair, is stepping in as a host for the first time. Yes, the lunatic is running the asylum. It's my first time, so if things go wrong, just laugh about it really. It's a midweek special on the Ramble this week, and we're going to get through all 10 games, so settle in, there's a chance things could get long, because I've never time managed either. With me today we have Jamie McIntosh, off the back of his impressive 75-point outing at the weekend. Hello Jamie.
Good afternoon.
With Jamie we have Stu and Garvey. Stu is holding Jamie off in third place for now, but I'm not sure that'll last long. Hello Stu.
Hello Graham.
And finally, it's the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of fantasy football, vibes over smart decision making. Hello, Taylor Murray.
No, I'll take that.
How are we doing?
I'm happy.
How are we doing today, gentlemen?
2 minutes into your hosting debut and you've slagged off Solskjaer.
It was intended to be a slag off of Taylor Murray, but both of them's fine. Right, so. How are we doing on this fine Tuesday?
Very good. It's a lovely, lovely sunny day in the capital.
I wouldn't go outside though. It's not. I'm not sure the sun's gonna. You have to know about the sun's there when you go outside. You freeze your bollocks off.
Yeah, it's a bit cold to get in the pool today.
Mm-hmm. Got a pool?
Nah, well, in the summer I did a podcast from the pool. I seem to remember getting a slagging for it. But
no, we've got some great nature sounds. I loved it.
Do you like getting a lilo and just a lilo?
Drift off.
A lilo sits on the beach. Talk about the football. Right.
Love it.
Before we get deep on this week's games, I just kind of want to ask like a big overview question. We saw the top six all drop points at the weekend. For you guys, what can we attribute this to? And more importantly, I guess for us, does it affect your fantasy thoughts going forward? Struan?
Yeah, I think it does. I think, quite surprisingly, just looking at my team, I don't have that many players from the top, like the quote-unquote top six, are the teams who are actually in Europe. Specifically, like at the moment, I don't have a single player from Liverpool. I've got one player from Man City, and I think I've got none from Man United. And I think that is mostly down to the rotation options and just how it's made me very nervous to make transfers, because although people always say, you know, wait till the last minute, I often jump the gun and do it quite early in the week because I normally make my mind up and then I don't want to start chopping and changing too often. But with these Champions League games now, I don't do it until at least Thursday night after the Europa League games, because I've just got the fear that somebody's going to be injured straight away. And that's happened with Diogo Jota, who's played one game week for me now and is out for another 2 months, which has basically just been a complete wasted transfer there. So
yeah,
I think it really has. And in a way, I'm not thinking about it, but it is probably one of the main factors in making my decisions for the transfers from week to week now.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, do you think that it's actually, are you looking to see if that will affect the actual league overall? Do you think a team like Southampton that don't have European commitments have a better chance to like even get in a Champions League place? Is that possible for them?
Potentially. We know that obviously the Christmas schedule is very busy as it is, but obviously some teams have got European commitments as well. I currently have three Southampton players, sorry, in my 11, and they're obviously playing Arsenal the weekend. So I think, it probably does help, obviously, if you don't have those extra games. I think it's something that we can potentially see up in Scotland as the season continues to roll on. Possibly Celtic might narrow the gap to Rangers without European commitments themselves. So, yes, I do believe that Southampton do have a very good chance with their slightly lesser schedule of fixtures.
Yeah. Taylor, like, we always have a busy kind of Christmas period, but I think it's something like 12 games across the festive period this season in the Premier League for all the big sides. Add on to that they've already played this congested European schedule. How worried are you about injuries for your squad?
When it gets to December, that is like in the mind of probably every fantasy player's mind to like try, not even just fantasy, just like just probably on football, that is the worry. December is like the one where you see a high input injuries coming, and it's probably one of the ones where you need to be cautious of who you pick in your fantasy and who you play in certain, and especially this year where it's like been highly reported that injuries are more frequent this season because obviously how quickly we came back and how many games are getting played. So I wouldn't be surprised by the way if like if somebody makes it through a week without having an injury and then having to bench players and basically having to change your team about because of injuries. So, yeah, no, it's, these games come thick and fast and an injury is a massive worry.
Just avoid Liverpool players and you'll be fine.
pretty much. Especially centre-halves, although I don't think they have any of them left. So, thanks for that segue. Thanks for that, Jamie. That's a nice, easy segue. We will start this week's games at Anfield as Liverpool take on Tottenham Hotspur, first versus second, tomorrow night at Anfield at 8 o'clock. Taylor, what is the most interesting aspect of this game, in your opinion?
Personally, I think the most interesting thing is to see how the quote-unquote deadly duo in a season, Kane's son, come up against a makeshift defence. Like, obviously, just at the weekend there, they dropped points to Crystal Palace, which, to be fair, is it a surprise this season, seeing Mourinho drop points away? Like, his style of football isn't the greatest, but he's been getting over the line. But he has performed against the bigger teams, so I'm interested to see exactly how they perform against a makeshift back line for Liverpool, and but also how Liverpool exploit Spurs' defence, because that they've not been the greatest either. They've just basically sat back, so will the Mannies and the Salahs be able to get in behind and perform? So I think it's just going to be a tight V defence kind of game, I think.
Of course, Joe Matip limped off at half-time in Liverpool's 1-1 draw against Fulham on Sunday, which led to Jordan Henderson and Fabinho, two centre-mids at centre-back. It's unlikely we'll see that. It looks like Nat Phillips will be playing if Matip can't. Jamie, you tend to, I don't know if you're just baiting me, you tend to have a negative opinion of Liverpool. Do you think Spurs have a good chance of getting something in this game, especially consider, even though Anfield's a fortress for Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the game of the week, I think you would say. That defeat to Antwerp, I think, is the only defeat Spurs have had for, well, as far as I can remember anyway, quite a long time. So I certainly don't think it's your kind of average home banker, which you're kind of used to when Liverpool play at Anfield. I just kind of hope that it's a half-decent game, because we know that, you know, obviously we saw it at Stamford Bridge a few weeks ago, Tottenham kind of set up rather negatively. And I just hope that isn't the case, because I think this has potential to be a very good game. Taylor said that he's looking forward to seeing the kind of Tottenham attack against Liverpool defence. I'm looking forward to the battle of the fullbacks to see which kind of set of fullbacks can come out on top. Obviously, we know all about Liverpool's fullbacks, but Spurs ones probably arguably slip under the radar a little bit going forward, especially Reguilon. Big fan of him since he's come in.
Yeah. Strewn how Sadio Mane has not scored in 8 games for Liverpool. I think that's a record. How worrying is that, in your opinion? He's still in my fantasy team, but how worrying is that?
I don't think it's massively worrying, because Liverpool have got one of those front threes where there's so much talent across the board that if one person isn't firing, the rest of the ones can step up. You know, we spoke on the Football Roundup about Aubameyang not doing anything for Arsenal, and that entire front three's just disappeared. But I think with the Liverpool team, you can see there's a lot of quality in there, and even with Mane stepping down. But I think it'll be interesting to see what approach Tottenham take, because we saw Mourinho against Chelsea and against Man City just parking the bus. But I don't think that'll be as effective against Liverpool, because I think the Liverpool attack is much better than Chelsea and Man City's. And I think they just have more ways of opening a defence, especially as we've spoken about the fullbacks. You know, I think what Alexander-Arnold and Robertson can do is just something completely different. And the front three as well, of Mane, Salah and Firmino, I think it might just be too much almost to risk parking the bus, especially when Liverpool's defence is so weak at this point. I think we could see quite an attack in Tottenham that we've not really been used to when they've played the Big Six this season.
Yeah, that's interesting. So on that, what kind of players will you be looking at to bring into your fantasy team for this game?
I think the only two Tottenham players who I would be looking at are Harry Kane and Heung-Min Son. Because even as good as they have been defensively this season, I think Liverpool will find a goal at some point. Whether they win or not, I think is yet to be seen. But I think Liverpool will score. But at the same time, I think Tottenham will have a goal in them as well, especially with how shaky that Liverpool defence will be. So yeah. I think I'd go for attackers from both sides. And I think fullbacks are a very good shout for Liverpool.
Yeah, Taylor, so a lot of the games involving Big Six teams this season have been really dull affairs. So when you're thinking about who you'll put in your fantasy team, does that come into it? Will it be more likely leaning on defenders? Or are you more like Struan in that you think that both teams will score a goal?
I'm in Struan's camp. I think both teams will score a goal. And given how this season's been going, I think it is the safe bet, just playing as little defenders as you can, make sure it's full back so you know they get points on the board somehow, and if a clean sheet comes, brucey bonus. But top six teams, by the way, it's a difficult one because none of them have really been hitting the marks. You've got like Timo Werner, who's like 9.5 or 9.4. You've still got your Mannies, and Salah's been producing somewhat, so you can't really put him in that category. Harry Kane as well, but it's like you've got your Aubameyangs, your Mannies, your Timo Werners, like even Calvert-Lewin's drying up a little bit. Obviously not as much, but so it is a difficult one this year about top six teams, but it's just about picking and choosing the games and just what ones you put them in. And after playing each other, then it's just that's one where you have to just go off your own accord who you think's better at that moment.
Jimmy, are there any under the radar fantasy signings that you think that could make a difference that maybe other people don't have?
No, not really. I think, you know, Struan said it, you know, Spurs, it's kind of it's relatively self-explanatory. Son and Kane are kind of the two that are at the heart of anything that Spurs are creating right now. Defensively, they do look all right, to be fair. I said earlier that I'm a big fan of Reguilón, but for this game in particular, I'm not so sure I would rush to really bring anybody in, to be honest, just because I think it's a game that could go either way. And obviously, going by the nature of the clubs that they play for, most of these players are quite high up the price list.
Okay, with that, let's get some predictions. Struan?
I've gone for 2-1 Liverpool. I think Liverpool see it over the line, and I think both teams will score, with Firmino to be the key man, because he tends to do quite well against Tottenham.
Lovely. Taylor?
I've went for a score draw, and Son to be the key man.
Jamie, what's your prediction? And I know Firmino's not the key man.
2-2 and Heung-min Son to notch.
Okay, and I am going to go for a 1-1 draw, and I think that Eric Dier will be key for Tottenham Hotspur. Okay, so that's game one done. And one team that we're looking to capitalise on potential missed points for Liverpool and Spurs are Chelsea, as they go to Molineux tonight to face Wolves in the 6 o'clock kickoff. Both teams come into this game having on the back of 1-0 defeats through penalties. Wolves lost at home to Villa, whereas Chelsea lost to stumbling Everton. Jamie, this fixture last year was kind of the coming out party for Frank Lampard's Chelsea. Tammy Abraham scored a hat-trick. Fikayo Tomori scored a goal of the season contender. Are you expecting a 5-2 in this game?
No.
No.
I have put it down for a 0-0.
No, why have you done that?
Well, we saw at the weekend Chelsea do sort of seem to struggle when a team kind of sits in, and I think Wolves will do that tonight. Obviously, they're missing Jimenez, who's kind of the target man. I thought they played quite well against Aston Villa, Wolves, but I think tonight they'll probably be a little more conservative and try and be relatively compact. Struan's highlighted many times that Wolves are pretty brutal to watch at times. I do think they'll try and be quite compact at the back and try and hit Chelsea on the break, because obviously they've got guys like Podence, Neto, who are Traore, who are quick going forward. So I think that could be their kind of plan of attack. And I could just kind of see it being a 0-0, to be honest. Yeah.
Taylor, no goals in two games for Wolves since Raul Jimenez fractured his skull. How big is he for that team? Obviously, just beyond goals, isn't it?
No, definitely. I think now we actually see what Jimenez does for the team, other than just score goals. He's always that target man that gets the team up the pitch. He can hold it up well, and he can link, as we've seen a number of times, like Traore into the play, or even back to Neves for these, you know, wonder goals that he only scores. But ever since he's been out of the team, they lack that identity that they've had because of him. And I've underestimated exactly how important he was. So I can't see Wilson actually doing much until he's out of back. Hopefully, you know, that Fabio Silva they bought for, like, was it 30 million? Maybe he could end up becoming a very important player for them, but he's played a couple of times. I think he's only scored in the Europa League. But as worrying times for Wolves, I would say, and this game against Chelsea, I think this could just dampen their woes even further.
Yeah, Fabio Silva, I thought, came in on Saturday and didn't have a bad game. He's 18 years old, and he wasn't clinical, but I thought he made some good runs, had gotten good positions just with age and with experience. I think that will come. I just kind of wanted to continue on him there. Struan, do you think sometimes when you see an injury so brutal and traumatic that it can take a team injury to recover? I mean, mentally in my head, when you see my teammate knocked out unconscious and fractured in his skull, it would just kind of linger in my head. Do you think that's a possible thing that's happened to the Wolves players?
Yeah, I think it'll take a massive impact. I think the game against Arsenal in that second half would have been absolutely horrible. And I think Conor Cody touched on it in his post-match interview that, you know, obviously you have to have your focus on the game, but there's no way they could keep their full focus on that game, you know, worrying about what's happening to their teammate. And I think just, even just in little instances in the game, you know, when they go in for the box, there's probably that doubt in the back of players' minds now that, oh, you know, this is really risky, you know, do I fully commit to this? You know, we've seen what's happened to Raul. And I think just seeing him, I think he visited the training ground the other day, so I think that'll give them quite a boost just in confidence, you know, to see that he's doing okay and stuff like that, and hopefully will get back soon. But yeah, I think it will take a massive impact, and if nothing else, it's just a player less in the dressing room who I'd imagine is probably quite vocal in amongst those players, especially with the impact he has on the team and his experience.
Yeah, as for Chelsea, no Hakim Ziyech, Callum Hudson-Odoi remains out, but Christian Pulisic returns to the squad. But what that means really is that the two Germans, Werner and Havertz, who will have to be big in this game, they'll have to step up. Jamie, they haven't been the best, as we've well documented. How important is it that they step up in this game?
Look, it's massive. I expect a better Chelsea performance with somebody like Pulisic coming in. Pulisic probably has exceeded expectations for me. Obviously, when he kind of came to Chelsea, for me anyway, personally, he was a bit of a kind of unknown quantity. I'll be perfectly honest, I didn't know an awful lot about him. And, you know, I kind of feel like Americans, they haven't produced an awful lot of kind of really exciting top-level talent. You know, the kind of the ones that spring to mind are like Donovan, Clint Dempsey, you know, Alex Morgan's probably one of the bigger names in football from America. So it would be fair to say, I think, that when Pulisic came, I didn't really have the highest expectations, especially considering he'd kind of come in to replace Eden Hazard. So for me, though, he's an absolute match winner for Chelsea. So if Chelsea are going to get 3 points tonight, I think he will be a huge influence in that happening. But yeah, look, Havertz was poor again. And for me, Werner's missing chances. You know, Werner's getting in the positions, which I suppose is encouraging, but he's missing the chances that, you know, he was kind of scoring for Leipzig, which is kind of interesting. You know, Havertz is really young, obviously, so I'm not overly concerned long term, but, you know, it's certainly you do see flops at Chelsea. And would Havertz be classed as a flop on his form so far?
I think something you should recommend. I think the turnaround in league campaigns was so short, there's no proper pre-season. I think it's actually possible to give every player a pass, given the pandemic and the crowd. It's just a kind of unique season. Sometimes it can be hard to settle in. And we'll come on to Fulham later on, but they look a different side to the team that started the Premier League season, and they had, it's not, I'm not sure that's a coincidence that they had the shortest turnaround in history, and that applies to players just as well as teams. Anyway, Jamie said 0-0. Struan, what are you predicting score wise for this game?
I've gone 2-0 Chelsea for this one. I think they're good luck against Wolves in the past, and I still have Timo Werner in my fantasy team, so he needs to do well this week.
So is that your key?
Is he captain?
Do you know what, he may be my key man is Mason Mount for this game.
The key man's Mason Mount for this game. Taylor, what's happening in this game?
I echo what Struan said. I'm not echoing the captaincy bit, but I think Chelsea will probably come out winners in this and win 2-1 with Mason Mount being the key man.
Okay, and Jimmy, you said 0-0, so I'm assuming that defenders are the way we should go.
Somebody like Patricio, because I do think Chelsea will be the better team, and I do think they'll have the better chances. So somebody like Patricio, who will probably be the busier of the two goalkeepers.
Fantastic. Well, that game is tonight at 6 o'clock, so we probably missed the deadline for that one, and obviously the whole weekend. And at 8 o'clock today, the other game is Manchester City West Brom. We won't spend long on this one. Taylor, is this anything other than a Manchester City route?
If it's less than 3, it's a disappointment. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's West Brom not good. Man City need a bounce back after that dreadful Manchester game. I'm not even going to call it a derby because it just... I have my own thoughts on that. But yeah, less than three is a disappointment.
Anyone else? Does anyone have any hope for West Brom?
I think three is a massive achievement for Man City, to be perfectly honest. I think they've been really poor going forward this season. Well, not poor, but for their standards, I think very poor. You know, you spoke earlier on about Sadio Mane. I think somebody like Raheem Sterling's probably in maybe even worse form, and we've barely seen Aguero through his injury as well. So,
but yeah, I Phil Long will get his standard goal every week, you know, or contribution, because he seems to be the only focal point West Brom has. Like, anywhere he'll pop up. So... well, maybe 3-1, but Man City should win this comfortably.
Yeah, City set a record. I was overlooked by the absolutely tepid and boring Manchester derby on Saturday, but City did keep a 7th consecutive clean sheet in all competitions, which is a club record. Jamie, should we put Man City defenders in? We talk about that all the time.
I'm not sure I would really rush to do it personally. Kind of just because I kind of try and avoid Man City players where possible, just because I've kind of learnt my lesson from that last season with Guardiola changing his team every 3 seconds. So he doesn't seem to have made too many changes of this season. Or he doesn't seem to make any subs, actually. That's a lie, I take that back. It seems to be more kind of during the game. He's been moaning about the busy fixture schedule, yet doesn't kind of utilise the 5-sub rule. So I've got it down for a 4-0. And I've captained De Bruyne this week.
Okay, so I've got 4-0 and De Bruyne up. Struan, score, and Keyman.
3-0, and Keyman, Ferran Torres.
And Taylor.
I think I'll win. Yeah, 3-0 and Mahrez. Struan, stop agreeing with me, please.
So, much in the way of optimism. Much in the way of optimism that West Brom are going to go into the Etihad and pick up all 3 points. Not really surprised at that, but that's in the Tuesday's games. So we'll switch on to Wednesday's. There's some good games in prospect, and we will start at the King Power Stadium as high flying Leicester take on stumbling Everton. Both sides picked up victories at the weekend. Leicester with an impressive and comfortable 3-0 win over Brighton, whereas Everton picked up a 1-0 victory with their first game with fans back at the Goodison Park over Chelsea. Gylfi Sigurdsson's penalty was the difference. Taylor, Leicester versus Everton, it's kind of like the battle of the teams that are just outside the big six. Who do you favour in this one? And why?
I've documented in the past how much I think Everton are class under Ancelotti, but obviously the last couple of weeks they've been stumbling, as you've alluded to. But Leicester, they're just a different animal when Vardy's on one. Like, he genuinely is such a massive... like focal point of that team, such a massive influence, and when he's on it, by the way, it brings other players into the game. You can just see exactly, they thrive off of his performances. So I generally can only see Vardy continuing on his good form of late, and possibly even bagging a hat-trick, depending how well Everton play, because Everton are just, they're an enigma. They play...
At what? I thought you were racist there. Oh my god. An enigma.
I said enigma.
Oh my god. Oh, just the way you said it, I didn't hear the start of it. Oh, jeez. Now the sweats jeez. Now.
Don't do that to me, Graham. Right.
It's like Jack missing one show and we're cancelled.
Sorry, you were saying. There you go. I'm not leaving anything out. I'm not editing anything in this one. So
anyway, Leicester are a puzzle, should we say? Then they're definitely one that they can either be on form, amazing one week, and just end up dropping an absolute stinker next. So yeah, it is one where I think they're probably still not bowled on anything from last week, and Leicester won out, probably 3-1 winners.
Okay. Struan, are Leicester a one-man team? Is it whatever Jimmy Vardy does, and however successful he is, that's how successful Leicester is?
I guess you could say so. I think we've seen quite a few times they've had quite a lot of bad injuries, but I would say there are players in that team like Ndidi, like Soyuncu, and Evans and Schmeichel, who also have a lot of importance to that team, but they're all quite defensive. So whenever you see on the score sheet and whatever else have you, none of them will really get the praise that Jamie Vardy does. And I think Jamie Vardy's just quite a popular figure, isn't it, to talk about. I mean, the Sheffield United game, there was probably more talk about the fact that he destroyed the corner flag than he actually scored a last-minute winner, to be honest. So I think, yeah, I think there is an argument to say he is a one-man team, but at the same time, I do think there are some very important players in that team. And we've seen James Maddison kind of coming back into form as well this season, so I think that'll lighten the load, especially given, I think, Vardy's 34 in January. So I don't know if his triple Red Bull or whatever diet is necessarily going to keep him going into his 30s the way it is now.
Yeah, Maddison picked up a double on Sunday against Brighton after a bit of a poor run of form. Is that like the key going forward for Leicester? Are they to maintain a challenge and get a proper Champions League run on the go? Is it Maddison producing the form that he's done at times, but not always? Strewn.
I think so. I thought Leicester did look good this season, but then in the game against Liverpool, I mean, credit to Liverpool because they are very good, but I just thought Leicester were absolutely dreadful that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is sort of been the problem with this Brendan Rodgers Leicester side over the last two seasons, really, now, that every time you think they could push for the top four, they could get things going, they just have an absolutely dreadful result, a bad performance, a couple of injuries here or there. I think they suffer from the same problems that Everton have, in that, you know, you've only really got 11, 12 good players, so once you do get 3 to 4 injuries, you are going to really struggle to replace key players there. So I think it will be a tough run for Leicester as well this season, but the European football will probably be one of the main factors in that as well. I think it's quite forgotten, actually, that Leicester are in the Europa League, so I think as that goes on, I think the league form will most likely dip.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this game, and on the other side, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is fit and available. James Rodriguez and Luca Dean remain out, but Leicester have Johnny Evans suspended, Soyuncu still out, Pereira still out. Is it feasting time for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Jamie, today?
No.
You watched Everton on Saturday as he beat your team 1-0, and after slaughtering them on Friday on the Ramble, I'm pretty sure. Did they kind of change their opinion on them at all, or not really?
Not really. I mean, the goal was a penalty. They looked all right, to be fair, but I mean, you know, they had like 28% of the ball. Chelsea had to post a couple of times. I didn't think Chelsea were particularly good. I didn't think they deserved to win the game, but I didn't really think they deserved to lose it either. Mm-hmm. But you know, to be fair to Everton, you know, that was them without James Rodriguez. And you know, we've spoken before about how much of an influence James Rodriguez and Richarlison, to be fair, have on this Everton team because of the lack of kind of service that Calvert-Lewin received in the games against like Southampton and like Newcastle and that when they were missing a couple of players, a couple of big players. So I still think Everton need to probably provide a bit more quality from elsewhere. You know, they can't just rely on like those three players. Obviously, I think guys like Luca Dinha being injured is massive because I think that's a kind of area where that they have been quite good, kind of getting balls into the box from kind of like the fullbacks, the defence and the goalkeeper we've spoken about before being a little questionable. So yeah, they haven't really changed my opinion too much, and I have put it down for a Leicester win.
For Everton to kind of get back to the level that they were at the start of the season, with those players being sideline, like, what players do you think need to step up? Can there be players that step up for them? There's players who are looking for more, somebody like a Wobey or Bernard, or just, is there anyone?
I suppose everybody, you know, you look at kind of like Alan and that, you know, he's slotted into that midfield role quite well. I've seen sort of the best and the worst of him now. I did tip him to be a bit of a flop. I think I did tip him to be my flop, actually, of the season, of the summer transfer window. Guys like Iwobi, Bernard, I just simply don't think they're good enough, to be honest. And then you sort of, you know, they do have quite a lot of players injured now. You know, you've got Rodriguez, Dinha, Delph, Coleman, all missing right now. So, you know, I suppose you're looking at, who are you looking at to step up, you know? Like, Tosin's the kind of solitary striker who's on the bench. Anthony Gordon's just a young guy still. John Joe Kenny came off the bench. Andre Gomez, Tom Davis, Bernard was an unused sub. But I don't know. I just don't. Sigurdsson obviously scored the penalty, but Kenny gets quite heavily criticised, I think, by a lot of Everton fans for kind of effort, I think, a lot of the time. So I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Iwobi, Bernard. So I do think Everton just rely too heavily on kind of Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, and James Rodriguez.
Taylor, on Calvert-Lewin, with Dean and Rodriguez out, probably need to stop saying it because it's at the start of every question. Should you be keeping Calvert-Lewin in your fantasy team, or should you be starting to look at maybe finding a replacement for him?
I think he needs to stay in that team, because if Everton do anything, it will be through him. He is always, he's much more improved this season than he was last season, scoring goals. He takes his chances a lot more, so isn't it a surprise if he always like notches up with a goal for like Everton, even if they are going to get beat, he probably will be the one that scores it or assists it. So I feel like he's still good to keep in there, because I think his value is 7.9, so right now he's slowly starting to get to that stage of being a premium price, but he's probably the higher end of like probably a reasonable price. However, he's not done it as much as of late. I'm pretty sure his last couple of games, in fact, I'll lie, his last couple of games, he's got an assist and a goal, so he's still producing, and maybe that just proves my point that he's still doing it for Everton.
So we kind of framed it as the battle of the strikers, Calvert-Lewin versus Jamie Vardy, but are there any other players in this game that you think are a worthwhile kind of punt for the fantasy team?
Madison or Barnes, probably, for me. Depends Madison on what you think the result's going to be, I suppose.
True.
If you fancy a home win, then home players. If you don't, then probably not.
I'll steer away from Barnes, because he's not been getting much game time of late, and it seems to be Perez has been starting a lot more. So
it's weird that the way.
Yeah, because Barnes always, when he comes on, he always either does something, like he influences the game where making the key passes unlocks, like, basically for someone else to get an assist in the goal, or he comes on and scores a goal, as we did, I'm pretty sure, last weekend. So, yeah, he's a weird one.
Okay, with that then, predictions. Struan?
2-2, Jamie Vardy, Keema.
2-2, okay. Taylor?
3-1, Leicester, Vardy.
Vardy, is it a clean sweep for Jamie Vardy, Jamie?
Yes, it is. 3-2 Leicester, Jamie Vardy.
So we're all predicting a good game in this one. It'll be one to watch maybe if Liverpool Spurs ends up being a poor one. This is at 8 o'clock. Nope, it might actually be at 6 o'clock.
Aye.
Is it 6 o'clock? So watch that before as a preview. Or you could watch this next game as
the undercard, if you will.
Struggling Arsenal, which is putting it lightly, struggling Arsenal take on high-flying Southampton at 6 o'clock on Amazon Prime. Oh, we had a conversation about Arsenal yesterday that meant the podcast went 75 minutes long. So let's retread that ground. Jamie, how bad are Arsenal?
they're a joke, to be honest. They're a shambles. Is Xhaka showing is he showing passion? I don't know. Is that, you know, passion? Xhaka, Pepe, all these red cards. Are they attempting to show passion, but just doing it in the wrong way? Or, you know, what do you think? It's just plain stupidity, is it not?
Well, I actually don't know if you saw the stat on that game on Sunday, that since Arteta has come in, Arsenal have had eight red cards,
yes.
And the team that are next to them are third, or have three,
yeah,
red cards, which I think is a pretty clear sign that it's ill discipline rather than passion with a you. But that's honestly one of the signs a lot of the time, isn't it? When a team just aren't working, it's just the discipline goes, and with Arsenal that's the case. I mean, Xhaka got sent off, and Elneny was lucky to not be sent off. Both were,
yeah,
off the ball incidents. And I said it on the roundup yesterday, I was just laugh at the fact that Xhaka got sent off for reacting to his own foul. It's just like, honestly, the funniest thing in the world to me. And it's not surprising at all. The guy's a lunatic at times. Taylor, do you see any way that Arsenal improve this season, or are they just a lost cause at this point?
Honestly, Arsenal are just a banter club, and I generally thought Arteta had turned them around, and I feel bad because I want Arteta to succeed so much, but it's just that club is riddled with players that don't want to be there. There's so many things going wrong. Like, why is now Saliba now getting touted? The fact is, he's not in the plans. Also, they need a creative player. Also, he's just sitting there, banished from the club. It's just a club that is just, it's in disarray, and they'll do well to stay up this season.
So, with that being said, Struan, how do you fancy Southampton's chances in this game? They're on a terrific run of form.
Yeah, I fancy Southampton. I said it on the Ramble as well. I think even if Arsenal weren't in this absolutely awful form, I think I would fancy Southampton. I think they've been really good this season. They play really attractive football to watch. I think Hasenhüttl is a fantastic manager. So, yeah, I'd fancy a Southampton win, to be honest. I think if Arsenal win, it'll be a huge upset, to be perfectly honest.
Is it a audition for an Arsenal job for Hasenhüttl, perhaps?
Is that a downgrade? Is that a bad joke? I personally believe that in the Premier League there's four what I would call elite managers in Klopp, Ancelotti, Jose Mourinho, and you could probably put Guardiola in that category as well. And after that, in my opinion,
I thought you were going to say Solskjaer too.
No, there's an S here. But after those four, who I think probably are the standouts, you know, they've all won the Champions League. I think I'd probably say Hasenhüttl, in my opinion, is the next best manager in the Premier League. I think what he's done, you're probably talking about him and Brendan Rodgers next after them, but I think he's done really well. And to be honest, I'll be surprised, no disrespect to Southampton, if he isn't in one of the top jobs in world football this time next year. Unless, of course, he goes and wins the Premier League with Southampton and turns them into the new Manchester City and they're all of a sudden up at the top of the Premier League, to be perfectly honest.
That is some big shouts for you.
I do believe there's quite a few clubs who I think are in desperate need of new management as well, top level clubs. I mean, one of the ones we speak about is Dortmund. Of course, he has a past in Germany, most recently with Leipzig, did very, very well with them. I think a lot of people forget how well he did with Leipzig before he went away to Southampton. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're eyeing him up, as you said, about Arsenal. I personally think Arsenal would actually go for Brendan Rodgers, but that's a whole other story. So, yeah, I think Hasenhüttl will be getting a lot more praise as the months go on, to be honest, and as a Southampton team. Because you look at that Southampton team, I mean, Theo Walcott is one of the best performers in it, and he's been a flop for, what, four or five years now? Mm-hmm. He's getting such... I've spoken about it so many times, I won't go on too much, but he's just getting the most out of players who you would probably consider to be average. I mean, if you even compared the squad player for player with Arsenal, you maybe even would say Arsenal's is better in that sense.
Yeah, last season, Southampton were a bit of the Ings and Ward-Prowse show in fantasy football. I think every time we got asked to do a prediction for their game, they were probably the key player 90% of the time. But I just want to kind of read out some of the stats for their players this season. Ings has 60 points, Adams 60 points, Ward-Prowse 64. So they're the main guys. But Armstrong has 43, Romeo holding midfield with 36, 35 for Bertrand, 46 for Walker Peters, 53 for Bednarak, and 59 for Yannick Vestergaard. Taylor, how important is it that you have Southampton players in your team? How important can they be for your side?
That is exactly the point I was just going to make. And the fact is, I've brought in James Ward-Prowse this week generally for that reason, because I feel like he is like one of the best dead ball specialists in the league, and he's always bound to be there and abouts. And then they're great at actually defending at the back, keeping clean sheets, so the likes of Kyle Walker-Peters, your Vandegaards, are up there.
Vandegaards? Is that one of the new signings?
is he Derek Jota's pal?
My pronunciation isn't on point because I don't have his name there. I can't remember exactly.
Yannick Vestergaard.
Vestergaard is the other one.
But then you've got your likes, say, like your Shea Adams and your Danny Ings are up there basically just still banging in goals no matter who it is. So, yeah, Southampton players are the Sheffield United players of this season. You've got to have them in. And I'd say Kyle Walker-Peters and James Ward-Prowse are your main men to have in.
It's just anyone can answer this question. But Shea Adams has got Scotland links that he could play for Scotland, and he has refused so far. But should he be looking beyond that? Should he be thinking that he can get England call-ups, Che Adams? Is he that kind of good?
No disrespect to Che Adams. I think he's an absolutely really talented, some fantastic English. I think he's a very talented striker, but I think the problem is, in the England system, you know, there's only one striker, and you'd probably argue this, like, one of the best strikers in the world, Harry Kane, is there. You're talking Dominic Calvert-Lewin's there, Danny Ings is there. I think, you know, there's other players like Callum Wilson and Tammy Abraham, to the point where Che Adams could be absolutely fantastic, you know, but you just look at the case of Jamie Vardy. We talk about him being one of the best strikers in the Premier League, but he kind of retired early because, you know, he's not really going to be getting that much game time there. So I do think it would be a huge opportunity, especially with Scotland qualifying for the Euros, because we did that. I think that's a massive opportunity for Che Adams. And no disrespect to strikers like Shankland and Burke and Callum Patterson, I guess, is in that category, but I think Che Adams walks into our team. He's probably like one of the best partners you could come up with for Lyndon Dykes.
Nah, I don't see it. I can't see Steve Clarke doing it. It's not in his style. I can't see like the players that have finally got us to a tournament, him basically benching them. You'd probably argue, say, the fact from a tactic point of view, that if it's there, go for it, but I just don't see Steve Clarke going for that.
Oh, well. Okay, this game then, predictions, fantasy players, Taylor.
So my prediction is Arsenal woes are going to continue. Their record of not winning at home is going to continue, and the record for not scoring goals in the league is going to continue. So 2-0 Southampton, and your man James Ward-Prowse.
Okay, Jamie.
1-0 Danny Ings.
Struan.
3-0 Theo Walcott. And can I add something in? Mm-hmm. I think Arsenal will get a player sent off.
Okay. Which one?
Oh, which? Who's left?
No Bellerin, no Xhaka.
Do you know what? I think it's going to be Tierney, because I think he'll be the one coming up against Walcott, and I fancy Walcott to have a really good game. So I think it could be one of them where he has to take a tactical foul or something. Or maybe it'll be like the goalkeeper or something, eh?
Arteta.
Yeah. Handles it out. Yeah, Arteta getting sent off on the side. I do fancy a red card. I'm not just saying that. I do fancy somebody to be... Do you know what? Ceballos. That's who it'll be.
Could this be the game where Arteta loses his job if he doesn't win?
Probably not.
Do you know, I would say no, because I think he'll get until at least the Chelsea game, because I think the next three games are very difficult. And I think they came out back in the manager either last night or this morning. I think Edu came out saying that they've still got a lot of faith in him, so... Maybe get to the new year after this festive period, to be honest. And I think they could lose to Southampton, as I said, in good form, but yeah.
Okay, I've not been doing many predictions because I've not been confident, but I am confident that Southampton will win this game. I think it'll be 2-0, and I think Che Adams will be the key man. That's lovely. So, next we'll move on to Thursday night, the last game of the week, as Sheffield United take on Struan's Man U. Sheffield United have 1.5 goals, no wins. Look, a lost cause. Struan, how many goals are Sheffield United winning this game by?
At least three. No, I think Sheffield United have had a really, really poor season, to be honest. And it is almost one of them where, you know, it should be a walkover for Man United, but there is still that doubt in your mind that you think they could nick something here, couldn't they? This could just be the game that they just change how the season's going, and they go and secure like a 1-0 or 2-0 victory or something like that, and it's another disaster for the fifth best manager in the league's 11.
you are a well-documented pessimistic.
I am very pessimistic about Man United, but I think, in my defence, I haven't always been. It's just, in recent years, you genuinely never know what you're going to get from this team. And I don't want to be getting overconfident just because I've seen this team beat RB Leipzig 5-0 and then lose to Istanbul Başakşehir 2-1 in the same period.
How can you be pessimistic against a team that's not won this season?
Because that's the team that Man United will mess up to this season. That's almost been the category of Solskjaer. Mm-hmm. I do fancy a United win, though. I'm not going to be that pessimistic. I do fancy Man United to get something.
Which United, you said you fancy United win?
You caught me out there. The Manchester United. The devil's not the blades.
Does anybody want to try and stake the case that Sheffield United aren't completely dead? They're already 8 points off 17th place.
If Oliver Burner starts proving he's 20 million worth, then yeah, they might move to 19th instead of 20th, but yeah, they're lost cause. They're done. They went from the reaches of Europe to now the Championship.
You know what's really sad is the Sanderberg song now just seems so bad. You know, that we're playing in Europe next season and then it's Championship. Very unfortunate.
Wap, wap, wap.
Sanderberg might be playing in Europe, to be perfectly honest, because I think he has a class above the Championship.
So, do we start making derby comparisons? When do we go from our Sheffield United getting relegated to are they going to get past the low points threshold? Is that
19 games in.
19, okay.
Because they have done it. I mean, they've scored against Arsenal and the teams around them. I think they drew to West Brom, so those are the teams around them.
Scored against
that zone.
Arsenal.
Yeah, but those are the teams around them, so they could potentially beat those others, you know, the six pointers. They've shown some positive signs there.
I think they'd love 6 points. I'm not sure they'll get that for a while.
What was the Derby points record?
Derby points record was, just give me one second.
It's either, I had a 4 in it. I'm not sure if it was 14 or 4. I can't remember. I don't,
yeah, 4?
They had 11 points.
11 points, okay. Maybe
so they had 3 wins and a draw in the remaining 26 games to...
But it not been 2 draws? Have I done bad maths?
If it was 11, it would have been 2 draws.
They had 11 points, so then Sheffield had 10.
Sheffield United, you can do this. Come on, don't... Go down with some dignity, please.
I obviously backed Watford last season for a large spell of the season. Sheffield United are, as you said, 8 points off safety. That's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But Burnley have only lost one of the last 5 games. And then you look above them and it's Brighton, Arsenal, Leeds, Wolves. Obviously, you've got Fulham there as well, who I'm sure will get on to starting to pick up a bit of form. So... Yeah, they're probably dead in the water, aren't they?
Okay. Predictions, key men, please. Struan?
2-0 Man United, and I've gone for Alex Talese as the key man because I believe he'll probably, being the more offensive fullback, he'll probably get the game time ahead of Luke Shaw.
I don't know, I think Luke Shaw's pretty offensive. Taylor Murray, who is winning this game, who is scoring this game, who is dominating this game?
Winning this game, Man United, scoring this game, Rashford the first, Bruno Ruiz penalty for the second, and Bruno just put on his amazing masterclass again and probably still pick up another player a month after scoring his penalty.
And Jimmy.
2-1 United, Man United that is, and Greenwood to score.
Lovely, thank you. Okay, let's move on to back to Wednesday. As we mentioned, Jimmy just mentioned them, Fulham take on Brighton in what has become a bit of a relegation six-pointer. If Fulham win this game, they will go above Brighton in the table. Something I'm not sure we thought would happen with Brighton at the start of the season. I thought we were all very positive on them, especially after the first couple of games. Jimmy, you kind of seem to... You mentioned Watford. It kind of seems like Brighton are kind of your Watford this season, a team that you kind of follow more than you probably should. How bad are they?
It's a good question, to be honest. You know, a game against Leicester, you know, they should have scored the first goal. You know, they had their chances, Brighton, in that game. And 3-0 was... Second half was poor, but the first half was a really good game. I had the Arsenal game on the TV and the Brighton game on the laptop. So I was kind of keeping an eye on both. Welbeck, obviously, has come in and he's done all right. I think we said yesterday, I think, perhaps, Struan, that we'd been quite impressed with Danny Welbeck. Since he's come in, so I can't really decide how bad Brighton are. You know, they've won 2 games, 6 defeats, 15 goals scored, 21 goals conceded. So the scoring goals, they've scored more than the teams around them, but they've also conceded more than the majority of the teams around them, apart from West Brom and Fulham. So this is a huge game.
A lot of huges.
Yeah, and I don't think Brighton will come out on top.
Mm-hmm. I've kind of been thinking this for a couple of weeks. I think Brighton are very similar to Ross County in the Scottish Premiership, and they're a team that have lots of chances, play some nice stuff, to be honest with you, but ultimately they don't win games, and Ross County are bottom of the Scottish League. And if Fulham win this game, as I'm going to be predicting, Brighton could likely be in the bottom 3. On Fulham, they've looked really good in the last 3 weeks. They picked up a massive one at the King Power. Something Brighton didn't do on Sunday. They lost to Manchester City, but it was only 2-0, and then they got an impressive point against Liverpool, and again, they were probably the better team. We were really down on Fulham, Taylor, at the start of the season, but are you kind of feeling as optimistic as I am right now, that they could survive?
I can see them surviving. I think at the start of the season, I tipped them to stay up in 17th, if I'm not good at my numbers. 17th, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've tipped them. The fact is that they could probably just edge it out. And now the fact that they're starting to get a little bit of form behind them and playing some... In fact, they've been playing good football, it's just not been working for them. So just getting that rhythm going at natural now, Lookman is performing great. You know, now that Mitrovic is back for the games during the week. So I'm actually optimistic the fact that Fulham can win this game. And I can see them probably pushing on against this because... The running games after this, I'm pretty sure, are rather favourable considering what they started with. I'm going to say that they're probably going to be playing the top 6 next, but no, they're playing Newcastle, Southampton, then Spurs, so I can see them still picking up maybe 4 points out of 9 there.
Okay. What's been the difference for Fulham, Struan? Like, what have you noticed in watching them? Like, how have they managed to improve things?
I think you pointed it out earlier, they're just getting more into the rhythm of things. The players seem to be clicking, because I think they made quite a lot of signings, you know, a lot of players brought in on loan, and I think it was just quite a different team to the one that got them there from the Championship. So I think that has taken a little bit of time to gel, find the best players in the best positions, you know, the right captain and stuff like that. And I think they've definitely got the quality, and they are playing really attractive football. So I think it's just one of those ones that's come with time. I remember saying on the first day in their 3-0 defeat to Arsenal, they sort of reminded me of Norwich last season, in the sense that they're still going to play the same way they did in the Championship, very offensively, but it's probably going to cost them. The way they do defend is not that good, but I think it is starting to come a little bit better for them, as they're just getting better, to be honest. I think some really good players in there, like Ademola Lookman, I think has looked absolutely fantastic. I think Ariel was a pretty decent keeper. I really like Joachim Anderson, the centre half, as well. So, yeah, I do fancy them to stay up, especially with the form of the other ones around them.
Yeah, I think maybe the start of the season for Fulham with the short turnaround was more of a reaction to the last time they were in the Premier League. Of course, everybody criticised them because they made so many signings, spent over £100 million, that when they came back up, Scott Parker was like, I'm sticking with the Championship guys. They're sticking with them. The other guys that got me up, the other guys are going to get me to stay up. And it's not been the case. They didn't do very well. But they brought, you said, you mentioned Lookman and Guisa, Loftus-Cheek, Cavalero, kind of new players. They have been excellent. And that is probably why their form's improved. So, with that being said, I'm going to start with this one, that I'm going to say Fulham are going to win this game 2-0 against Brighton, and that Ademola Lookman will be the key man. What do you think, Struan?
I have also gone for a Fulham victory, however, only the 1-0, and Ademola Lookman to be the key man again.
Okay. Oh, Jamie, you kind of...
I've also gone with Ademola to look at Ademola Lookman to be the clean. Oh, Jesus Christ!
It's a tough name.
I've also gone with Ademola Lookman to be the clear. Oh, for fuck's sake! 2-1 Lookman to score.
Taylor,
I'm not even gonna try that. Lookman 2-1. Show me one.
I think Jimmy said Augustus Gloop rather than Ademola Lookman.
Oh. That's a quartet of Lookmans, though.
A quartet of Lookmans, a quartet of Fulham wins. So, obviously, Brighton will win this game.
Yep. Daniel Welbeck hat-trick is probably how it's happening.
What's next? Next up is Leeds-Newcastle, a 6 o'clock game on Wednesday. This game, to me, seems like a game... This is a massive game, two massive teams. But it's not really, is it? Jimmy, how big's this game? Like, these are two big sizes, are they not?
Two big supports.
Probably a good distinction.
Yeah, two big fan bases, two big clubs, but just not necessarily
two good teams.
Two good clubs, yeah, and kind of, yeah, basically.
Big teams, bad clubs. Yeah, big clubs, bad teams.
Big
cardboard box.
Mm-hmm. Big, right. How do you see this one going, Jimmy?
I've put it down for 2-0 to Leeds. I don't really know why.
Don't really know why. No.
Newcastle they're both quite inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Newcastle obviously got the win at the weekend, back to back wins actually. Got the win against West Brom. But you know, we do think that Leeds are gonna be a step up, we think, anyway, on West Brom. And Newcastle have not conceded too many goals. They've not scored too many goals. They're kind of averaging like 1.5 goals scored, 1.5 goals conceded per game. But with Leeds' defence, obviously they've been leaking goals, but they've also been scoring goals. So you should really be looking at both teams to score in this one, although I have gone with 2-0 Leeds, as I say. But again, it's probably one of the... Yeah, it's probably the game on all my predictions that I'm probably like the least certain about.
Yeah,
kind of calling.
I'm with you on that. I never like Newcastle. I just don't like them and the way they play. But I am kind of nervous to pick Leeds. I think Leeds' form and consistency doesn't always show up. I think the results don't match some of their performances too, and it's a shame because I enjoy watching them most weeks. Like Leeds, Struan, when they're in the Championship with Bielsa the first couple of seasons, they tend to suffer from this thing, for a bit overworking, and they tend to die off in the second half of seasons. Is that possible with the congested schedule that we're seeing that with Leeds already? They are kind of fallen down the league table.
Yeah, I think they might burn out even sooner, to be perfectly honest, other than the half point. I think no European football will be a massive bonus to them in that sense, but the way they're playing, the intensity that they are, they already have suffered quite a few injuries throughout the season, the likes of Rodrigo missing games already. So, and I think both, like, I don't think they're even playing two recognised centre-halves at the moment. I think it's Luke Ayling and Alioski, who are both full-backs, have to fill in alongside super-duper Liam Cooper. So I think it is going to take a massive impact on them. But Leeds are a tricky one with me, because I do just feel they're so inconsistent. You know, it's no matter what form they're in, what league position, what players are in, out, what have you, I think Bielsa is just going to play the exact same way he always does. You know, I think he's quite a straightforward manager in that sense. You know, he believes in what he's going to do, and he doesn't need to change it. He doesn't need to play these sort of mind games and stuff like that. And I think that will cost Leeds in the future if they don't tend to adapt, especially when certain players are out of form. As we know, he's definitely going to stick with Patrick Bamford. The fact that Rodrigo's actually been playing in midfield a few times, so I think that will come to haunt them, and especially if they do get some key injuries in there.
Okay. Taylor, tell me how this game's going to play out. Give me your prediction and give me your key fantasy players for it.
Struan, did you just say Super Duper Liam Cooper?
Did
say. Yes, I did.
That's a name, that's a title episode name.
Right.
The captain of Leeds United.
You've really, really hurt his feelings, I think.
Mm-hmm. This game's one of the games where you just don't know. If you're a betting man, you stay away from it. If you're a fan of the club, you hope for your team. And if you're a neutral, you just avoid it at all costs, because it's probably going to be boring. This is going to be a game where it's probably going to be a go each, and probably park the bus through there, just hope for the point. Or if you do what I do, I think Newcastle could nick a win by winning 2-1. Because I don't understand why, but somehow Steve Bruce knows how to win games when it looks against them. So I can see Leeds dominating, doing the usual being on top. We've alluded to that they might be tiring out earlier this season than before. So, and Newcastle, or just Newcastle, they just get results from nowhere, and I can see them winning 2-1 Newcastle.
JB, you said 2-0 Leeds. Who's going to be the key man?
Luke Ayling. Clean sheet and an assist.
Lovely. And Struan, do you want to round us out for that one?
Going for a 1-1 with Carl Darlow to be the man of the match at Newcastle.
But yeah, I think I'll pick the same result as you. Key man, I'll decide later on. I can do that. Here we have.
You have that power.
Okay, we have two games left. Which one will I pick first? That's the kind of order we're going with. Let's go with the Thursday game. Aston Villa Burnley. Aston Villa's picked up a massive win on Saturday. They had a man sent off, but managed to sneak a win at Molineux. Burnley won at Arsenal, which is nothing special. So both teams a bit of confidence. We've just slaughtered Arsenal on this podcast.
We managed to fit an Arsenal dig into every single fixture this week, and I love it.
Villa have been great this season, Struan. Is that something that you think is going to continue in this game against Burnley?
Yeah, I think Villa have been absolutely fantastic, and they've got a great lineup. The only big change, I think, will be, I think Douglas Luiz will be quite a big miss. I think he's one of those ones who sort of goes a bit under the radar, with likes of Ollie Watkins, Jack Grealish. Even Emi Martinez has gotten quite a lot of praise this season, of course, the ex-Arsenal keeper. But I think they will just continue their form, to be honest. I wasn't too impressed with Burnley, even though they did beat Arsenal. I thought for much of that game, Arsenal were in charge, and it was an own goal in the end that got Burnley over the line. But I think Burnley will probably come out a bit more in this game, and I think that'll just cost them big time. So I would still fancy Aston Villa to most likely get a good result here.
Mm-hmm. 1-5 for Burnley, Taylor. Are they beginning to turn around their season, and will they end up being the Burnley of old that are comfortably safe?
What are you talking about in the long run, like when it comes to the end of the season and being safe? Yes, I do see that. And I can see them probably turn around their fortunes after Christmas. In light of this game, no. I see them just... I feel that Arsenal win masked over still some problems. I didn't see them playing well. The fact is, it was a Aubameyang own goal. Maybe masked the fact is their strikers aren't doing enough. I see only one winner in this, and it could be Aston Villa. Cause who would have knew last season that goal like that, when VAR messed up, that Aston Villa being the one that ascended for them and Sheffield crumbled. That was probably, you're probably called a maniac if you thought that. So Aston Villa are just incredible. Dean Smith has been playing phenomenal football, and Jack Grealish has proven why he, in fact, not proven, he's shown why he felt it was right to stay at Aston Villa for another season, and he's been a great player for them.
Cool. Jamie, it's the Battle of the Clarets and Blues. Who is going to win this one? Key men as well, please.
I've put it down for Villa to win. It's an interesting game, though, on paper. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Villa have lost 4 out of the last 5 at home. Obviously, the one win came against Liverpool. And as you've just alluded to, Burnley's form has taken a step up. Obviously, the only defeat in the last 5 coming at the Etihad. Obviously, no shame in that. So, I don't know. I think this could be an interesting one. And I think Struan's right to mention that Douglas Luiz missing will be a big miss for them. I don't really know who's going to kind of fill in there. So is Conor Hourihan going to be the one to just come in and have to sit? I think Douglas Luiz's presence just allows everybody else just that bit more freedom. Obviously, Barkley's out as well, so that's obviously he's not going to be the sitting midfielder, but he is another man in the middle of that part in the middle of the park. So I don't know. I'm quite intrigued to see how Villa get on without Douglas Luiz. I put it down for 2-0 Villa and Jack Grealish to be the key man. I've actually brought him into my team this week as well. That's my transfer, spoiler alert. But I do think this game comes with an element of a question mark hovering over it.
Cool. Taylor, prediction, key man?
3-0 Villa and Watkins.
And Struan Rounders out.
2-0 Villa, John McGinn.
Lovely. Last game then of the game week is a London derby. There's always a London derby, to be honest with you. It's West Ham taking on Crystal Palace. Taylor,
Brexit
you
game
are
of the week?
Fantasy game of the week?
No, Brexit.
Brexit, you say, oh, you say Brexit game of the week.
Is it?
I don't know. I like too many players in Crystal Palace for it to be the Brexit game of the week, which I'll come on to in a second. But Taylor, you are the West Ham man in this party. They are having a great season, picked up a fantastic win at Elland Road on Friday. Is that something you can see carrying on?
Yeah, West Ham have been phenomenal. David Moyes has been great. I've always backed him. Great manager, by the way, and he's actually done a tremendous job.
I'm pretty sure you said at the start of the season that you hope West Ham get relegated.
We don't talk about the technicalities of little things. It's just the small print. Like, we don't look at that. But in all seriousness, by the way, Dave Moyes has exceeded my expectations. I've said it before that he's turned West Ham around more than that I expected, and should I have seen it coming? Probably, because he did it first time around and then it fell off. So I do expect a drop off at some point. But sitting in fifth is mental. West Ham sitting in fifth. Crystal Palace are also on a okay run. 3 wins in the last 5. But West Ham are going to come out winners in this. And who would have thought the loss of Antonio, by the way, wouldn't be as big a miss as what it is. It's, you know, you could probably say that the strikers aren't performing well. You've got your Haller, who's still... Could you say that he's proved his worth? No, he hasn't. I don't see it in him, but... You know, Fornals is Jamie's man, you know, the greatest player that's ever came out of Spain. I think he's Spanish, yeah. Every greatest player that's came out of Spain, you know, wandered our right foot. And then, you're just, I think the team's just playing great. This isn't a high, and I can only see this still continuing until probably West Ham come up against, I think it's West Ham. I think it's when they come up against Man United soon that's when I think their form will drop off.
Yeah, United just played
Chelsea, that's it. When I see them come up against Chelsea after this game, so after that's when a drop off will happen. West Ham 1-2 now. I'm saying West Ham.
Okay. As for Palace, Jamie, we talk all the time, we have for months and months, that Crystal Palace are Wilfred Zaha, and if he's not performing, they don't perform. But Iheanacho Eze has stepped up for them. How important and how big a thing for Crystal Palace is it if they can get a secondary creator like Eze consistently performing?
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, look, it lifts a lot of the pressure off Zaha. If you've basically got a very talented winger on the other side. You know, look, I mean, with Zaha previously, you know, Palace have been very one-dimensional, and obviously he's been at the heart of everything that Palace have kind of done. And I think at times it kind of has got the better of him in many respects regarding his kind of overall attitude to probably to like the club. Obviously, it's pretty well documented that he kind of wanted away. But I think somebody like Eze coming in hopefully can get a bit of excitement back into him. And I think it has, because his form has been very good, Zaha's, recently. And, you know, obviously people have been very critical, me included, of his attitude in the past. Kind of like the tail end of last season, I think, probably Project Restart and that, I think, if I remember rightly. So I think somebody like Eze is huge for Crystal Palace, obviously, because it just provides another aspect on the other side of the pitch. You know, it just makes it a bit harder for teams. They can't just mark double up on Zaha or something, for example. You know, there's two of them now to watch out for.
Cool. Okay, this is the last game, Struan, that you have to predict. You have to have a key man for. Who are you going for?
I'm going 2-1 to West Ham, and I've said Jarrod Bowen. However, I'd also give a bit of credit to Thomas Souček, because he pops up with so many different headers.
Lots of goals and corners and set pieces, I feel like.
His new David Moyes' new Fellaini.
Taylor, you said you're back in your West Ham team then?
Oh, yeah, 2-0, and Jarrod Bowen to just continue his good run of form and just being sensational.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this Jarrod Bowen, loving him, a big fan too. And Jimmy, is that a clean sweep for West Ham?
No,
cool.
1-1, my favourite prediction. And Zaha to score,
the Jimmy McIntosh. What a better way to finish the roundup of the games with the Jimmy McIntosh special. But as always, we'll continue. We'll finish this week's episode with the Fantasy Team of the Week. I don't remember what Jack calls it.
Premium so picks.
The premium
premium.
Pick.
No, it's not that.
Oh no.
It's the premium picks of Wild Productions. It's the fucking Fantasy Team of the Week. Let's get it going. Let's start, as we always do, with the goalkeepers, the defenders. Who should you be selecting for this game week? Let's start with Taylor Murray.
Okay, I didn't expect that. I'll start right off by putting in my four players that will get you, you know, if I do my quick maths, you know, 6, 12, 18, 24 points, it will be Darlow, Chilwell, Walker, and Kyle Walker-Peters. Oh, I've got two Walkers in there. I didn't even notice. Yeah, but that's the men who will get you all your points at the back. Chilwell's the risky one, but, you know, we'll see. But you're guaranteed 9 out of 12. 9 out of... Taylor, come on, 12? I don't know. You're guaranteed points.
Cool. Where are we going for, Jimmy?
I'm kind of down a hole a wee bit here. Mm-hmm. I've got McCarthy and Patricio are my two goalkeepers. I've put McCarthy is currently in the sticks of the now just because he was at the weekend and he got me a clean sheet. I have put the Southampton game down for a 1-1 and I have put the Chelsea one down as a 0-0. So I should really be going for Patricio, but whether I will or not is another matter. As for kind of recommendations, I think a lot of people have got Martinez. He's a relatively cheaper option, and I think he'll keep a clean sheet at home to Burnley. Ederson, and potentially the Leeds boy. He's got a funny name, Meslier or something. What's his name?
Meslier.
Aye, him. He could be a good shout as well.
Some great saves on Friday, Meslier. Yeah. Struan, have you got any other sneaky picks for defenders or goalkeepers that we should?
Yeah, I have got Meslier. I do have him and Lloris, so I'm benching Lloris for this week and playing Meslier, and then, you know, Kyle Walker, James Justin, Chilwell, and James. Just the standards, really.
Yeah, no. I'll just give a shout out to Ezri Konsa, who's been a stalwart in my team after being a throwaway pick at the start, and he's been excellent. So that's kind of Ezri Konsa. I don't have a good defence, but I love Ezri Konsa. Let's move on to the creators in the midfield. Probably the best position in fantasy this year. So many options to choose from. So Struan, who are you going for?
I've still got Aubameyang. Every time
you
I try
do?
To take,
why?
Yeah, every single time I try to take him out, somebody else picks up an injury, and it's absolutely. This week it was going to be him, but then Diogo Jota has been out for 2 months, so I've brought in Ferran Torres, who is my captain this week. Timo Werner has lost. Timo Werner has lost the armband because he is not a very good striker at the moment, but he will probably score a hat trick now I've taken it off him. And my other one is Wilfred Zaha. who is a good player.
Yeah. You know, you can make more than one sub, one transfer.
Just take a minute. I think it's worth the minus 4 points at this point.
So yeah. I've got Curtis Jones and Bissouma on the bench.
Mm-hmm. His form is 1.8 at Aubameyang, 11.5 million. He's not had a game week over the normal since.
Do you know what? He's coming up for Heung-Min Son right now, and I'm taking a point at a live transfer on air.
He's too expensive. Like, there's so many other players that you could bring in, I think, for that price.
He's 2.9 million more than so 2.something million more than Heung-Min Son. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Have you got De Bruyne? No.
No, I've got Foden. I've got the better one.
Are we just brushing over the fact he's captain Ferran Torres? Like,
I meant to say Phil Foden when I said the captain as well. Sorry, I don't know how Captain Foden. Yeah, I've captained Phil Foden this week because I think this is a meaningless game, so that's probably when Guardiola will give him his chance because he's the best youngster he's ever played with. So I think
I'm worried. I've captained De Bruyne. I'm a wee bit worried that he could be dropped. Just got a wee feeling. Don't know why. Just got a feeling.
He's not close to the assist record yet, so I think he'll probably keep playing.
Yeah, I brought in Fernandes as my change for Sadio Mane, whose form's just not been good enough. Bruno Fernandes, and I will probably start him as my captain. Yeah, Taylor, who have you got? What are you picking?
I took out Ferran Torres. I brought him in for the last 2 weeks because I thought he'd played the last 2 weeks, played one out of two. And I've took him out and brought Mason Mount in because I feel like he's just a consistent one in the Chelsea midfield, and I have belief in him. And just I've captained Grealish this week as I played Burnley, and I expect a big performance for him. And then you've just got your standard Son and Ward-Prowse in there. So yeah.
And JB, who have you got?
Captain's De Bruyne, Armstrong, Grealish, and Son.
Okay. Basically, you can't go wrong apart from if you pick a Aubameyang.
See if Aubameyang scores goals at this weekend. Mm-hmm. I may just quit fantasy at that point. I
think we should point out again that Taylor laughed at Struan's pick of a Man City player as his captain, but Taylor did triple captain Kyle Walker in the first month of last season, and that should never, ever be forgotten.
Yeah, that needs to be forgotten.
Strikers. Let's finish on the strikers. We talked a lot about the Vardy and Calvert-Lewin matchup for Leicester Everton. Is that the way you guys are going, or do we have somebody else in mind?
I've got both.
Both?
Both. Mm-hmm. Not used a transfer, had them both in. Vardy was my captain and obviously got a goal and two assists, I believe, at the weekend. I think only the one bonus point, though. So, very good week for him, for me, although he doesn't hold on to the armband. Vardy, Calvert-Lewin and Danny Ings keep the same front three that started at the weekend.
Lovely. Taylor, who have you got?
I've got a front three of Werner, who I've decided is now in a timeline of he's got until the West Ham game to he's got up until the Arsenal game to perform. After that, he'll be getting took out, and we'll find out the course of the time who that's for. DCL, Dominic Calvert-Lewin in there, just as always, because he'll perform somewhat, and Callum Wilson.
Okay. And Struan, you have the honour of being the last person to tell us who your strikers are. I've got
Harald Kane, good striker. Mm-hmm. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, good striker. Timo Werner, a German striker.
German striker, indeed. Someone says
I can't really say he's a good striker at the moment.
Fraud.
He's my vice captain this week. He's been downgraded after what game week are we in? A 13 game week. He's been my captain for 11 out of the 12, and he's going to be dropped again this time.
I'm going to stick some money on him to score then.
Some remarkable faith in Timo Werner keeping him in for the whole season when he'd done fuck all.
It was more faith in the fact that as soon as I drop him from the captaincy, he'd turn up, and I'm now testing that theory this weekend. So,
playing with fire money over here.
Aubameyang and Werner hat trick, expect that.
Yeah.
Honestly, if that happens,
goodbye, Struan. No, no ramble appearances for you.
No, I don't think I'll be allowed to.
Okay, well, I have Patrick Bamford, Harry Kane, Calvert-Lewin. I don't know why I've still got Bamford in. In fact, I don't know, he's done alright, but
better than Werner.
Just kind of one of these pictures. I don't like picking Bamford. I don't like picking Bamford, but he's actually just somehow doing it, doing well.
He's Pookie 2.0.
He's doing enough. And with that, I think that's the end of today's Fantasy Ramble.
I thought I suggested they'd try and make it a bit shorter, and we are once again at 75 minutes. So that's fun. But
thanks, RTC.
I will end by thanking Stu and Garvey. I will thank Taylor Murray. I will thank Jimmy McIntosh, and I will apologise if things didn't go smoothly without Jack Donnelly. I have been Graham Sinclair. This has been the best student fantasy podcast in the land. See you on Friday.